tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 460 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Salutations.
It's only been a little more than 24 hours since we did our big awards show, which I'm currently editing, and it looks like it turned out to be about 6.5 hours, which was, I was trying to keep it under 6 hours and got over that, so.
We tried.
Had a good time, though.
We added some late-minute additions to pretty much a lot of categories, which I think was worthwhile, because I think most of them were worth discussing. But it was, I think that was probably push it over the top.
Yeah, exactly.
That's happened to other award shows I've done, too. It just, you know, okay. There's always stuff you, forget. No big deal.
I don't think that's a bad thing, but it just, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it was a good thing, yeah. We're going to do the shows a little out of order today because of the way we're recording this podcast. So I'll very quickly touch on the news, which I only had one thing, which is they did premiere, not surprisingly, a promo for Tokyo Revengers this week. That was the first time I've seen anything from it.
I didn't see this promo, so
okay. Yeah, you can pull it up on YouTube, but the character designs in this show look familiar to me, like I've seen them before, but I can't place it.
I mean, they're very delinquent-coded characters. Like, if you've seen delinquent in an anime or manga, you've probably seen these kinds of archetypes before, like the pompadour and the bleached hair and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, this is a popular IP, so you may have just seen these characters in particular randomly, but they also just look like a lot like delinquent characters you see in most anime and manga.
The archetypes, yes. It was more, I was actually referring more to the way the eyes are drawn in this show. It looks like something I've seen somewhere before. Maybe it was this. Maybe I saw a chapter of this one time. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to talk too much about it. It's just, it's what we talked about last week about what the show is. Yeah, and they kind of go into that. Although I was mistaken. I thought it had to do with his girlfriend dying, but apparently it's his sister.
No, it's his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, somebody in the promo says that your sister will die or something like that.
Right. That's her little brother, who is also an important character that I can go into if you want to, but you meet him eventually. He's an important character. So his sister, which is his ex-girlfriend, dies. And then, so it's both the main character, but also her little brother are kind of tag teaming. It'll get explained, but the little brother.
Yeah. Don't tell me anything. I want to go in blind. I'm just going off of what was in the promo. That's all. So, okay. Interesting. It's good to know that I wasn't confused. I was just misinformed, or I didn't have the whole picture yet. So, well, we're actually going to start this week. We've got a couple of shows this weekend that were airing the final episodes of their seasons. So we're going to start out with Blue Exorcist this week, so we can kind of knock that out because we also rank it. So let's begin with Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, Beyond the Snow Saga, Episode 12, Parting. Okay, here's my notes. Shima arrives to take Yukio, who is joining the Illuminati. So this is right after the end of the previous episode. We see Yukio and Rin leaving the prison or whatever he was in. And Yukio's I'm not going to go with you, Rin.
Yukio said he expected Rin to break him out, that he very much expected this. This is not necessarily according to plan, but I know you, Rin, so I knew this was going to happen. And then this kind of parlays into the whole the helicopter that was an invisibility cloaking or something, and then it dissipated. I guess it was magic or something, but...
Yeah, these helicopters have done this before, I think. But also, I think Rin said that he expected to get broken out, but not quite so soon.
He was even
surprised how fast it was.
I mean, Yukio said that. About Rin.
Yukio said that he was surprised that Rin broke him out so soon, not necessarily that he was broken out.
But he does it in like a kind of like almost chuckling way where he's just kind of like, because he's so, I don't know.
Literally during this moment, it shows like a flashback of Lucifer speaking his sweet nothings into Yukio's face and ears. Yep. Like, if you want power, come to me.
This is what we predicted a while back. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's kind of there's this dialogue here. Yukio is basically like, he's kind of like warping his memory of his past and his upbringing, where he's like, you were always the perfect one, and I was always, you know, a failure, a wimp, a nobody, a loser. And of course, that's not true. And Rin says that. He's like, no, you weren't. You're smart. You're popular. You're capable. But Yukio refuses to see that.
Yeah, I was a little puzzled because everything, like, obviously, we haven't necessarily seen the full picture, which is why the next arc will touch upon this, of course. But that literally everything we've seen between their dad and Yukio has been kind of a loving relationship. There's no, like, oh, there's maybe something sus here, or oh, maybe the father didn't love him very much, or there's some abuse. No, like, everything we've seen has been Yukio and the dad, whose name I'm blanking on, but, like, we've always had a wonderful relationship as far as you can tell. I think there was one cliffhanger where he wanted to tell Yukio something, and we never saw what he was going to tell Yukio. I think that was a couple episodes ago, if I remember. But other than that, there was never anything to question the relationship and, like, or cast a negative light. So just like, where is Yukio getting this from exactly, other than like angst or whatever? But I mean, I don't want to be dismissive, but it's just,
I think it's at least the way I read it is that Yukio is clearly has like a warped perception of his own relationships with his family. Like, it's what he experienced, what he thinks he experienced really isn't true, but he just his memory has been so warped by like a sense of inferiority that he can't even see what's right in front of his face. Maybe this is a weird example, but it kind of reminds me of people with eating disorders who don't realize that they're either overweight or super thin. Like, they just don't.
Oh yeah. They're like obese, but they think they're like super thin or vice versa. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's not quite that, but like he just doesn't see that he, you know, was loved. He doesn't even see his own capabilities and aptitude, and he has like this really severe inferiority complex. Like, it's clearly a flaw in his character that is kind of driving him to do this, all this nonsense. So
yeah, speaking of nonsense, so Rin pleads with him, like you said, like, this isn't true, I'm here to help you, blah blah blah. And that's when Yukio does what we all expected him to do, and we saw in the promo, he pulls a gun right on Rin and he's like, I don't need your help anymore. And like I said, Shima is there in the helicopter to come and take him away. But before he gets on, he shoots Rin with his gun. Bang, bang, bang. Puts like 3 or 4 holes in him, quote unquote holes. And Rin falls down.
Now, I don't know if he expected to kill Rin at this moment, or if he just sort of was like gambling. Like, I know Rin can probably survive a bullet, and just shoots him just out of amusement almost.
I was expecting Rin to like taunt Yukio a little bit, like, you wouldn't shoot me, I'm your brother, come on, put the gun. Like, I thought there was gonna be that whole like drawn out kind of thing you often see. So just going, you know, shooting him like nothing was actually kind of surprising to me. Like,
Rin said they weren't real bullets as he was getting up. He was like, it weren't real bullets, but which means that Yukio wasn't trying to kill him, I don't think.
Right, but it was still like, it still hurt him, like, clearly.
Yeah.
They were like non-lethal, but they were clearly like, point was to like harm and debilitate, yeah, not necessarily kill.
But there's a big difference between trying to kill somebody and just like stopping them. And I think he was just, he chose to just stop him in this moment.
I kind of think he was just kind of shooting and almost didn't like care what the consequence was. Like, I wonder what happens if I shoot Rin. Like, he might not die. He might die. I don't know. He's kind of half demon, half human. He might survive a bullet. Let's try it. You know, he's so out there that like, that's kind of how I felt. He's just shooting because he's upset and he doesn't even know what'll happen, but he's just kind of gambling at this point.
Right. That's so the rest of the student X-Wires, the rest of the class are nearby. They see this and they're like shocked, like gasping, like, oh my God, Yukio shot Rin. Shimmy tries to run out to go and is calling out, Yuki, Yuki. And then Amaimon is there and Maimon stops her. But then in this moment, he goes, she looks at him and like angrily and she's like, get out of my way. And then Amaimon kind of looks back at her and he just says, you are.
Yeah. So he starts to recognize what Shiemi is, which we don't know what Shiemi is.
I have a theory.
No, for many months.
Maybe she's like some, like, blessed by some forest spirit. I don't know, like something related.
Reincarnation, an angel or something. I don't know. Like maybe she's. Yeah.
Ooh, that's a great idea. Like she's an angel. We haven't seen angels in this show.
I was wondering if she was a clone. Like
that's what I was gonna say. You beat me to it. I was gonna say, I wonder if she's just another clone body that was meant to house a. How's a demon?
I noticed that like Lucifer has blonde hair and she has blonde hair. I'm like, am I thinking about this too deeply? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I don't think they're the only characters in the show who have blonde hair. That can't be true, right?
I don't think Seda is suggesting every person with blonde hair is that, but
right.
Could be more than a coincidence that they all have it. You know what I mean? Or many do. So I'm just
saying. But yeah, I'm going to guess she's like some reincarnation maybe, or like blessed by a spirit or something.
I like this idea that she's an angel. I think that's kind of interesting. There needs to be angels in this world. If there's like, where's the heaven side of things? I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, while this is going on, you know, of course, Yukio's eye flares up, which signifies Satan, and Satan actually starts speaking. Rin calls him out. It's like, Satan, you're controlling Yukio. And Yukio's like, no, he's not in control. He's inside me, but he's not in control.
He's just chilling out, living rent free in my head.
Literally. Yeah. But then Satan is like, I've got plans for you in the future. You're going to be my body in the future, Rin. That's the whole reason you exist. You exist to be my body. And then he uses his power. Satan uses his power to break the coma sword.
Yeah, I think Rin tries to jump at Yukio, and Yukio deflects with like a force field generated by Satan, and then it breaks the sword.
Yes. Then Yukio climbs up onto the helicopter, and he says a couple things, but basically the main thing he says is that no matter what, I'm going to become stronger than you, Rin. It's like, yeah, well, he kind of goes into his like, I don't know, Rin, if I don't think that the Illuminati or the Exorcist, they're the same thing, and they're all bad in their own ways.
He's both parties of the same kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly. And says, but all I care about is I'm going to become stronger than you. He gets on the helicopter. And of course, that's when we get like Shima being like, see you guys later. Like in his goofy way.
Double. Like this is the 12th double cross something. It's like, I don't really get
how he's not double crossing. I think he's just playing the middle ground. He's not on any one side.
But it's just kind of the joke we were making. Like,
yeah,
none of this should make any sense. You can't be like a double agent. Like it doesn't make sense, but whatever.
The problem with it, I like the idea that he's not on anyone's side, he's working for both sides. That's interesting to me. What's frustrating is that all his friends don't hate him for it.
Yeah, like they could have like locked him up or done something with him, you know, weeks ago, but they never did.
No, they just let him continue to cause mischief.
They basically gave him free reign to do whatever he wants.
Well, but that's Mephisto, though. Mephisto wants him to do that because Mephisto gets things out of Shima doing this. So I don't even think they have a say in it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but the thing is, the Illuminati should be like, our double agent is known. What's their use?
Yeah. So. Well, and again, I think it's the other side. They get stuff from him as well. Like he's just playing both sides. They're wanting him to do this. It's a weird situation. What's frustrating is that his friends trust him in any regard. Like, they should be completely super weary of him at all times. All right.
Oh, one thing important to mention, Yuku lost his glasses, but he did not slick back his hair.
Okay.
It was the reference to Aizen, but all right.
All right, let's go on. Yeah, go to the commercial. We come back. And we learned that, of course, this is not a surprise. We should have seen this coming, that with the coma sword broken, the coma sword was what keeping Rin the way he was. It was keeping his demon heart in Gehenna. But now that the sword is broken.
They've explained this before. So like this didn't come out of nowhere. Right. So.
But we're seeing it now for the first time.
Right.
Well, maybe not. But anyway, we're seeing it now.
See, the sword's broken before, but this is worse than it was last time.
Yes. So now the sword's completely broken. His demon heart comes back into the material world from Gehenna. You can literally see it on his chest. He starts flaming up in a way that he can't control. It's raging. And even Chimmy and the others who are standing nearby are like, this isn't the typical warm heat that it's comes
hot.
Off Rin.
They
this
said
is it, hot.
They said it's hot. Yeah.
Yeah. So hot, in fact, that it literally burns his body to a crisp. Like he is like completely charred and to the point where they believe he is dead.
Yeah, and Amaimon is kind of mocking him, just like, oh, too bad, yes. I'm out of here.
Yeah, he kind of leaves. He's like, oh, I thought you were going to survive that. I guess not. But from the ashes, Rin's new body is formed. He kind of comes back, and he's now got a brand new body, and he's got white hair, and he's like, his kind of demon side, I'll call it, is now manifest forward. He kind of like looks at everybody, and he kind of like, hey guys, how's it going? You know, that kind of thing.
And he starts like kind of slowly walking towards the rest of the class, of which Shammy's like summoned a forest to like stop the fire. It's almost like a barrier of sorts. And he is like, Rin at this point is kind of threatening them. Like, I wonder if you can survive this, like literally might kill them. He doesn't care anymore. But right when this happens, he starts to have his like inner fight with himself in his metaphysical, like inner personality, mind, or whatever, his mind palace. Whatever you want
to call it. Exactly.
Within himself.
His demon side is in there, and he's talking to it. He's like, I'm going to take over and all this stuff. And Rin kind of wins that battle. I'm not going to go into details, but he just
This is sort of typical where he's like, this is my body. This is my life. He says this a handful of times, like, you can't have it. So.
Yeah, it was a pretty quick confrontation. It wasn't like a long drawn out affair. No. So.
But this is kind of like neat because we're kind of seeing the, again, I keep wanting to say the true, but it's not true. It's just the demon form of him is in there.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. It's not true. It's different or other side or whatever.
Yeah, he is half demon, and that's his demon half. And the demon half would be callous and uncaring, and it is. But he kind of talks it down, and he takes over his body. He kind of wakes back up. And again, everyone's surprised to see that he's not only alive, but that he now looks different.
Well, I don't think, we don't know what, he just wakes up in like Mephisto's bed, right? And we don't know what happens, like, I don't know what happened to the rest of the class, like, at that point.
No, I mean, I think Rin, like, you know, comes to his senses and then apologizes to his friends and then passes out. And then we get to skip to Mephisto's bedroom.
I forgot. I thought he just passed out and then woke up. I actually forgot that he said something.
Because remember, she was shielding them from the flames. And then that's while that was happening. That's when Rin was doing his internal battle.
I just thought he like passed out immediately after beating himself and then woke up.
He said a few words to his friends before passing out.
I missed that. Anyways, so he's now wakes up and he's like, what is going on? Please explain.
Instead of explaining, he just gives me a key, or tells me he had a key that basically was a key, so to speak, to be able to walk back in the past. Because Mephisto is too lazy to just tell Rin the truth. He wants to make Rin do the work of looking at the truth himself through timey-wimey magic.
So Mephisto actually kind of goes into detail here about the fact that, well, I'm a demon. I'm the demon of time, and I'm not going to give you all the answers. The way it works is when people ask me to want to find out the truth about their past, I'm going to make them find out for themselves.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what he said, but something like, I'll let you know what you don't want to know, but I won't let you know what you do want to know. Something like that.
Right.
Rin is going to have to catch his own fish.
But like you said, he manifests the key, which showed up in the opening. I'm like, what's that key? That's what it is. So this is leading in, and of course, Yukio walked up to the first door. Because it doesn't matter what door you use it on. He just walks up to the first door. It's there. Rin, thank you, uses the key. A white light appears. He walks through the door, and that's the end of the season, which makes it pretty clear. I think this is an interesting way that the next season is going to take place in the past.
Well, the next season is literally called the Blue Knight Saga. So there'll be, like, we're going to see the Blue Knight.
Yep.
Right. So apparently my understanding is that actually most of the next season is in the past, not like an episode, which makes me curious, how is that going to work? Because I think Rin I think Mephisto gave him a coat that would let him like not interact with the past or be invisible or something. Because I guess he didn't want time paradoxes
It wasn't that he couldn't be seen. It was that it would allow him access to anywhere he wants to go. It was like this coat it signifies him as a certain rank that he can just get by through anything.
Also a disguise.
Well, I guess
we'll have to see exactly how it works when we get the fifth season at some point.
Yeah, because Rin doesn't seem like the type of guy to not cause a time paradox if he has the opportunity to do so. So I'm curious how they're going to manage that.
Yeah. We don't know how time travel works in this show. There may be no possible.
We'll have to figure out how the time travel works.
Yeah. But yeah, so that'll be the next season.
Mephisto is playing with fire here. Mephisto is playing with fire. Blue fire.
One thing I want to mention, though, when Rin walks out into the balcony to meet Mephisto, we see in the background that the city behind him is like in flames and there are explosions everywhere. And I'm just like, did Armageddon happen? Yeah, like, what the fuck's going on?
That's the that's the whole, like, everyone's seeing demons now.
The whole city
now.
Is destroyed.
That's the demons.
Yeah. Things have gotten, like, we already knew things were unraveling, but things have gotten pretty dire, where, like, literally the whole, like scene was, like, every building was destroyed or burning.
Like, I mean, that's, like...
Yeah. It wasn't that bad
an episode ago. It looked like an Armageddon from SMT, like, you know, the Judgment Day or some shit back there.
Just a bunch of fires and stuff.
And Mephisto was even... Yeah. Even like, I know some of this, you can go off and do your thing. So what does Mephisto actually have to do? I don't know, but
I'm surprised he does anything.
He mentioned he's still recovering, so but we'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time to re-rank this show. When was the last time we ranked it? Was it at the end of season one?
After season one, like a decade ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago or something.
Well, we re-ranked it at some point after that, but that's originally.
True, yeah. Last year or something, right? So,
yeah, we basically have to take... It's actually pretty darn low on our list.
I agree.
Based on only season one. So we have to take into account now that we're sort of injecting season two, three, and four into our ranking. And I think it goes without saying, it's probably going to come up because we all agree it's gotten better. Now how much? So I guess as far as a review of the fourth season compared to like earlier seasons, not to relitigate too much on what we talked about on the Game of the Year podcast or Game of the Year and Toonami of the Year podcast, that we did last week, which I know is not out yet, but, I think we all agree that season two still wasn't great. The Impure King stuff, we kind of talked about some of the pacing and some like the Impure King itself being kind of goofy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Season three is when things started kind of getting rolling. Maybe some like animation. I think season three was probably the worst looking season overall.
They changed studios, so
yeah, they did. Yep. And some of the Izumo stuff, like we said, kind of didn't really resolve maybe too satisfactory. Season four, I think, is an improvement on season three in most regards. We got a lot of drama now happening, a lot of Yukio. Scales are raised, stakes are higher. We've talked about the cast being surprisingly coming together, most of them. So I think it's basically been improving
throughout. Yeah, my take is, like you said, Kyoto arc, meh, it's kind of lame. It was all right, but I didn't really care that much about that one. Shimane, much better, much better. Even with the like lackluster ending to that arc, I still liked that one a lot more. That's when things got interesting. Like the show started to really tackle its core story. Because like the Kyoto arc felt like a side story. It felt like DLC. And then we got to Shimane, and it's like, oh, this is the main story of Blue Exorcist.
Sequel as opposed to DLC?
Actually following through.
Yeah, it's like, it was like, you could remove the Kyoto arc from the story, and it really has no effect on anything story-wise.
I tell you, Toto's going to come back and be really important. He's still out there.
But Shimane really introduced the Illuminati, introduced the whole overall story, the plan, everything about what's going on. And then this arc is the best one because it's doubles down on that. We need to re-rank it. It's definitely improved since season one. So
it's just a matter of how much it's improved relative to other shows, which I guess goes without saying, but
yeah, go ahead and try to pick a number.
I'm curious. So how many total episodes have we seen now? Like,
I can tell you
it's like 24, 12, 12 and 12. So is that right? There's something like 60 episodes.
We're at the end of Beyond the Snow. So there's been 61 episodes.
Only? I thought there was more, but
yeah, because it's like 25, 12, 12, and 12 or something like that. So yeah, that's 60, 61. Yep. I'm just kidding. Okay. So 60 episodes that we're basically including in this ranking here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are including season one.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that season one still exists,
I'm just kind of reminding myself.
Yeah. The way I'm thinking about it is like we ranked it at 70 only knowing about season one.
And of course, the back half was that garbage gecko shit. So,
yeah. Do we include the gecko stuff?
I don't.
Like, because it's, I think it makes sense. Because we did include that gecko ending stuff when we did our original ranking. Yeah. But no, now,
it makes sense for season one because that's all that existed. But now that seasons two, three, and so on exist, we can, like, I think, lop that off. So
I kind of think we can because the show did.
The show itself ignores it. So that's actually kind of interesting because our ranking right now, Blue Exorcist is ranked 70th out of 96 shows. So like bottom fourth, basically, almost. But that is including like that gecko half. So you could probably assume if we kind of cut that out, that 70 ranking would actually be a little higher kind of naturally.
Could be.
Just on its own. But still, let's just agree that we're considering seasons 1 through 4, ignoring that gecko half because the show does, right?
Yeah.
So
remember there was even like a Tom and Sarah, like, just so you're not confused.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom.
All right. Everyone think of a number here, and then when you're ready, we'll type it in.
This is kind of hard.
It is hard because it's really more about competing with shows that we have on the list is really the thing. I have a number I'm going to try.
Yeah, I think I have a range. Opening volley, but we'll obviously have to adjust that.
Okay. Everybody type it in and then get ready to hit enter.
I'm not ready.
Okay.
So countdown. 3, 2, 1. When is that?
Well, we're waiting on Seda.
I'm not ready. Okay, I have a number. I don't know if I like it, but I have a number.
Yeah, I don't think I like my number either, but we'll go through it. Okay, yeah. Press enter in 3, 2, 1, enter. Ooh, okay.
You two are close. I'm a little higher. Yes.
So the results were that Seda was the highest at 45. Which is where Lazarus was. I was at 53, which is at right around where Dragon Ball Super is. And Crocodile was at 54, which is where Ninja Kamui is.
Hey, when we have almost 100 shows on the list, the fact that we're within like 10, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Sorry that I'm a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not going to like defend me being higher. I was just kind of looking in that middle section. I think this show is kind of as a whole, you know, it's not a bad shonen. It's not a top tier shonen, but I think it's definitely gotten to the point where it's respectable.
I think I'm trying to agree, which makes sense since we're pretty close to each other. I was just basically looking at the middle and seeing which shows are like, okay, I definitely like this more, or I'm pretty sure I like this more, and then kind of going from there. But I also knew like I didn't want to stress too much about it because we were going to have debated. So that's kind of where my opening volley was landed.
I feel good about going higher than I put mine. I'm okay with that. Shugaze, Lupin, Super, those are fine shows, but I think I've been more engaged with the story of Blue Exorcist and its characters than I did with any of those shows.
Okay, so I see we have Naruto sitting at 50, the original Naruto, and I'm trying to remember, does that include everything?
No, it's just Naruto Classic, not Shippuden.
But does it include filler hell? I don't remember what we decided. I just don't.
Sorry. I don't remember either.
Anyways, I think like Naruto has obvious qualities in terms of creativity, in terms of lasting impact. It does some pretty cool world building things, even though it misfires there also. I think it's hard to deny that like Naruto's world is really compelling.
Yeah, I think there are definitely things in Naruto
I think that's something that has a leg up on Blue Exorcist, where Blue Exorcist is less about like the world because it's just the real world with demons. So
yeah, I guess my thing was that like I totally understand and respect the faults that classic Naruto has. I think they've discussed Legion both on this podcast and every other place where people discuss anime. But I do think it's a little too iconic, a little too sturdy, a little too influential there, and it does some things a little too right. And I don't think I'd put Blue Exorcist over it at this point in time.
That's kind of what I was getting at, is I put it above Naruto, and now I'm kind of like, maybe not.
I could put it above Shoegaze. I don't know if I put it above Lupin the Third, Part 4, just because I remember I have pretty strong, good memories of that part.
Yeah, I agree. We can maybe, like, either right above or right below Lupin, Part 4, but not above Naruto. I kind of, now, you know, thinking about it, even though Naruto has flaws and filler, I just think it does too many things well that gained it its, you know, lasting legacy. So,
okay. I think I agree with that. And because I don't feel as strongly as Crocodile does about Lupin, I'm willing to put it right below Lupin.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm fine with that,
too. It's hard to compare to Lupin because it's so different. It's a different type of show. It doesn't really matter if it's above or below Lupin because it's not comparing to, we're not comparing it directly to Lupin, or we probably shouldn't. So I'm fine with right below.
My thing about Blue Exorcist, the thing that's won me over the most is the way they deal with characters in this show. I think that's its strongest attribute.
I agree. Absolutely.
It's not the animation, which is good, but it's not the animation. It's not the music. It's not
necessarily the plot.
Not really even the plot. Or the world. It's very derivative in a lot of those respects. But it's the way that these characters continue to change and grow and go in way different directions than you think they will that has made it really strong. So yes, let's go ahead and put it at the new number 52, right below Lupin the Third Part 4 and right above Fooly Cooly Shoegaze. That is a huge glow up for this show.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Bottom fourth to middle fourth.
Yeah, the show's improved substantially, but still not like a masterpiece. So I think that's a good spot for it.
Good point.
I still remember Lupin Part 4. I don't remember the exact line, but someone exclaims like, "What the Da Vinci?" Stuck with me.
The hell, Da Vinci,
or damn it, Da Vinci, or something like that. it's just so funny.
All right, there we
Some
go.
Some exclamation about Da Vinci, which is so funny.
Da Vinci was so goofy in that show. So yes.
Yeah. So we didn't. So we moved it up. We didn't add a show in this case.
No, we didn't. So now, yeah. So sorry, real quick. Blue Exorcist is the new number 52. It has jumped 18 spots.
Also in this podcast, although we're recording it separately due to schedules, we're also going to be re-ranking Mashal.
Yes.
It's already on the list, but we're going to be re-ranking that too.
All right. But we are now done with Blue Exorcist for now. Here's hoping it does come back. There's every reason to believe it would. You, Crocodile, I think you know more about this than I do. Has the fifth part aired already?
Yes, it's fully aired. I think there might be some issues where they might be like the Blu-ray timing or something that might be delaying things, but it's fully aired. Yeah.
That's what I gathered, is that it's fully aired. It aired like a year ago. It's fully dubbed already. We're not waiting on a dub, but we're waiting on like the home video release, which is oftentimes what they use. Not always, but oftentimes what they use for like the Toonami airing.
Okay.
So they might be waiting for that.
It would be a shame if they didn't bring it back for this season, considering the cliffhanger we just got. So,
and it's like, you wouldn't expect getting the rights to the fifth season would be any different than other seasons other than cost. And the only thing I can think of is if they bought it, they spent money on Blue Exorcist, and they realized through whatever metrics they have that was not worth it. Let's not get season five. They could make that decision. I'm just speculating, but hopefully
I think it's more likely they want to get it all and were told you can only get through season four and season five wasn't available yet. I think that's probably what happened.
That's probably because the deal was probably made a while ago or something. So
yeah,
that's my thinking on it. One last bit about Blue Exorcist before we move to the next show. I want to say is that this is a minor thing. When you guys were watching the soundtrack video that I posted yesterday for the awards, did you notice on the cover that Rin had white hair?
He at the very end of the opening, he has white hair.
Oh, okay. I never picked up on that. I thought that was something else.
So I was sort of expecting eventually he'd go through some transformation.
Yeah, just boom, boom, double trigger. Yeah, there you go.
So yeah, so when I got that album cover art and I put it in the video, and then I like had it in there for like days before you know, and then I was like, I looked at it again and I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't right. Is this a spoiler? And then I went and I looked it up and I'm like, I literally typed in like, when does Rin get white hair? And it was literally the episode we just watched. And I'm like, okay, that'll work because we'll record this the day after everyone sees that. So I'll leave it. It wasn't a spoiler. I mean, it would have been a spoiler, but it wasn't. So it was a spoiler to me, though. When I saw the album cover, I'm like, what's going on here? Okay. Well, let's backtrack and let's go back and talk now about Primal. Primal, Season 3, Episode 3, Feast of Flesh. I'm going to burn through this synopsis because it is not a lot happens in this. It's very, again, the pacing in Primal is deliberately slow. So basically, Spear follows a little insect.
A grasshopper, right?
It's like a grasshopper, yeah. Kind of reminds him or keeps making him think of Fang.
Similar color scheme.
And he ends up kind of chasing it around, climbing trees, trying to get it, and ultimately falls into a cave deep underground where he's then attacked by a bunch of these, I just called them blind monsters. I don't know what these are.
I thought they were like trolls or gremlins or something. I don't know. Yeah. Like the forms, they're not humans per se, but they're like little gremlin guy, the monsters or whatever.
Yeah, they kind of look like
in my Gollum. Notes, I call them zombie gremlins. I don't think they're zombies, but
they have like where their eyes should be. There's just like skin folds. I get this idea that they're like blind.
Yeah, like mole rats kind of or something of that sort.
Oh, yeah. Mole rats is a good analogy. They have big front teeth, too. Yeah. Anyway, that's the first half of the episode. Literally, like the first 15 minutes is just that. And then when we come back. Spear wakes up, but he's hanging upside down. He's been tied up by these creatures, and he's hanging in a cave full of just dead human bodies. All these bodies.
Of course, all the flesh on his hand has been eaten off, or hands.
Yeah, he literally has a skeleton hand now on one arm. And you can see a bunch of these little gremlin monsters just chowing on the flesh of the people they've killed. And then I wrote, the insect, quote unquote, helps him escape. But basically, he sees that little grasshopper in the cave and it kind of bounces around him and it gives him the motivation to kind of free himself.
Yeah. So this little grasshopper is flying around. All the gremlins like want to kill it. And Spear doesn't want it to be killed. So he really wants to save it. So he frees himself because he's so determined to save the grasshopper.
Bond with the grasshopper, like over the course of the first half of the episode, like I think it was over a day. Cause like the sun set and rose again over in the first half of the episode. So he, you know, I was with the grasshopper's like, I don't know what's going on, but Spear bond with it.
Yeah. He was like holding in his hands, protecting it from predators and stuff before he fell in the hole. Well, he does get free. He's chasing after these things, which are chasing after the grasshopper, but one of them smashes the grasshopper. And this just completely enrages Spear. He gets so crazy that he ends up slaughtering all of them. He grabs his spear and just starts whack-a-moling them in the head until they're all dead.
It should be clear, it's not necessarily his spear he grabs, but rather a spear that he found amongst one of the corpses. So he claimed he took that spear and just starts stabbing all of them, and just kind of, it was kind of this montage of Azuma's face, and he's going stab, 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 and all the criminals running at him just getting stabbed. It was kind of pretty funny in the way that Spear likes to do his massacres, as we've seen in many, of course, of the show.
One thing that was kind of interesting was that, like, it eventually showed Spear's face as he was stabbing all these gremlins, and he didn't show like anger on his face anymore. It was almost just like remorse. He was totally like, not even, I don't know if it was remorse. It was just like, I was gonna say his eyes, he just had like dead eyes, which is kind of funny because he is dead, but like he just like, there was like nobody's home. Like he wasn't even like cognizant almost. He's just like going through the motions almost. So just stab, stab,
just
stab,
another
stab.
Day just, at like, the slaughter factory, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's it's almost like he's not even thinking. He's unthinking. He's just like, obviously he was really, really, really upset and mad and like yelling moments ago, but there's a clip in this episode where he's just like stabbing, and he just like, it gets to the point where it's like becomes just
he's not
like,
even looking. Like, he's just automatic. Staring. He's like staring off in the distance and just stab, 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 stab. Yeah. Well, after he's killed them all, he kind of looks at the spear and he's like, okay, I'll keep this. And then he walks up to another body and kind of rips the clothes off, and he kind of puts on some clothes for the first time. And then he also, one of the bodies was wearing a kind of like necklace with a tooth on it.
Fang made him think of Fang.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, okay. And it kind of reminds him, oh yeah, I'm looking for Fang, and puts that on as well. He piles all the bodies up and uses the pile to kind of climb out of that hole. And then he's resumes looking for Fang. So now he's continues his quest. You might be right, Seda, that this whole season is going to be him looking for Fang. It could be. I don't know.
There's also a moment in this episode where his like liver or something just falls out.
Yeah, that's like, why he kept the clothing to hold it in inside. He had taken so much damage in the fight that his organs were falling out. So, yeah.
He just stuffs his, like, I don't know if it's a liver or a kidney or whatever. It looked like a liver to me. Just stuffs it back in.
At least from where it's falling out from, I was pretty sure it was a liver.
Yeah, that's a running thing in this show, too, as well. Is he just continues to get more and more decrepit as he goes. He's missing part of his skull. He's got all these scratches on him. Big torso is part of a missing of his torso. His organs are falling out, and now he's so missing half an arm.
He just has a skeleton arm now, right? So
yeah. It was kind of amusing because he was using the skeleton to grab things and claw people, and it's like, mm-hmm. if you have no muscle on there, you can't actually do any new things. But I'm sure they're hand-waving it for magic, but it was just something that was very obvious, like none of that should work, but whatever.
It makes me think even more so that like he's so magical now in that way that he can't die and that he like literally can move bone. Is like, it's that I'm thinking like, we don't really know where this character can go at this point because there's magic involved.
My thinking is if each subsequent episode, his body gets more and more damaged, there's going to be a point where he has to get a new body or be done for good, because otherwise he'll just be an actual skeleton. And I don't think they're going to go that route. It's just like skeleton spear. I don't think they're going to do that. So I think something's going to happen where he's either put to rest for good or transmigrates to a new body or something. I'm not sure, but this trend line can't continue forever.
So before we move on to the next show, I want to quickly ask you, Seda, did you see the promo for the next episode?
Of Primal? No.
Do you want to know what happens in the promo?
Sure, that's fine. I don't, yeah. It's
okay. Fine. So the next episode is a clip from an episode we've already seen. It's the one where, I forget the woman's name that he like, you know, becomes his girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah, in the second season, yeah.
Yeah, it's the one where her village is attacked and Fang and Fang's little dinosaurs are there protecting the village.
Oh, so was that a flashback? I wasn't sure if that was a flashback to when he was still alive or after he died.
I'm like fairly certain that was like pulled directly from a previous episode.
Because were they fighting giant boars or were they fighting other humans? Or so I'm trying to remember in the actual season two.
I don't know. It looked like something I had seen before. And somebody else in the thread said like, oh, that's from season two or whatever. So I think it is.
I have to look back at it. But I mean, we'll see soon enough either way. But it's definitely like we're changing perspective, at least for some portion of the next episode. So that would be interesting.
For a moment, I saw her in the promo. I'm like, okay. I have a good idea of what the time period is now. But then I kind of realized, I think this is a flashback to a previous season, which means we still don't really know what time he's in now. I still think it's primal times, but I don't know like if it's been 50 years, 20 years, 10 years, 100 years. I don't know.
Yeah, the fact that Spear was dead kind of makes it ambiguous. How long was he dead?
Right.
So,
all right. So let's move on again in our weird random order. Let's do One Piece. One Piece, episode 762, The Delinquent Comes Home. Big Emperor Mom's Assassins. The title, of course, is referring specifically to the character Peckhams. He's the delinquent. And the Big Mom Assassins are him and the person he's with, which is Capone Beji. So, Crocodile, what were your thoughts on this episode? Give us your quick thoughts.
I guess I was kind of worried that they're going to stretch the bit where the Peckhams was going to think that Straw Hats were guilty for too long, but I'm glad got cleared up.
Yeah.
I did not expect Capone to just kill, or well, I mean, it's One Piece, so I'm sure Peckhams are not dead, but I did not expect Capone to, that's his name, right? Capone? The other guy from the one of the
Beji 12. Capone, yeah.
Right, so I didn't expect him to shoot Peckhams because I guess he's that loyal to Big Mom or something. But I'm assuming that what happens is Sanji goes off of him to, like, prevent a breakout of war between the Big Mom Pirates and the island or something. I've not seen this part of One Piece. I only have some knowledge from Osnosis, but not perfect knowledge. I'm assuming that's what happens. I'm glad the Peckham's thing didn't misunderstand, didn't care for too long. Did not expect Capone to do that. And I'm curious to see what happens, though I guess I can vaguely figure out kind of what happens just based on what Brook is teasing. Though, of course, the pacing of the episode is terrible, as is norm for One Piece episodes. I guess that's all I'll say on that.
Okay. All right, let me go through the rundown. Everybody is on their way to Cat Viper. They're all riding those big alligator things. Everyone's there. It's Wanda, Kara, the Straw Hats,
they basically ask her to continue the story. Or they ask not necessarily just Wanda, but Luffy and everyone is like, well, what happened next before they get to Cat Viper? And then we go back into flashback mode. They show Brooke starts explaining that they were escaping the Big Mom Pirates. That's how they got to the island. And then they kind of like switch perspective here, where Brooke mentions, well, one of the Big Mom Pirates is from Zo.
Yeah.
And then it kind of switches perspective to Peckhams. Is that his name? And like the lion guy. And Beji or whatever.
Beji.
Yeah. What's the name?
Beji.
Is it Veggie, like vegetable?
No, like B-E-G-E, Beji.
Oh, Beji. Okay. So yeah, so what Crocodile was mentioning earlier is it shows these two characters kind of wandering through Zo, which has been attacked by Kaido's pirates crew, or Jack or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Peckhams is obviously kind of distraught because this is his home and whatnot. So he's kind of running through. He at first blames the Straw Hats, like, this must have been the Straw Hats, blah, 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 blah. He gets to the kind of the guards at the gate, and I agree with Crocodile here. Like, he was like, this was the Straw Hats, you know, we had to go after the Straw Hats, what, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I hope they don't draw this out, that would be really dumb. But they don't, luckily. They eventually, after like a minute, tell them, cool down, the Straw Hats are here, but they helped us out, blah, blah, blah. During all this, like, there's a couple of scenes with, like, Caesar's making medicine, and he wants to keep his, I guess his persona of being like an evil genius. So he's like, I don't want people to know I'm helping make medicine. And I don't know, it's kind of goofy.
A couple of things I want to mention real quickly. We were asking last week, it's like, why wasn't Luffy asking about Sanji more? And we did learn really briefly before Brooke went into his story that Sanji actually left him a letter. And he kind of mentions, like, the letter just basically says that he's like, don't worry about it, I'll be back, is what he said in the letter. Even though I think Brooke and everybody else, and like Brooke and Nami, are like, they don't believe him. So that's a little bit why Luffy wasn't as concerned about it. They just kind of bring that up right now. They're like, oh yeah, he left a letter. They don't say what's in the letter, but it's just that. Peckhams gets explained by the guards. They're like, no, the Straw Hats. And so now he just completely flips, and he's like, oh, the Straw Hats are the greatest thing ever. They saved my kingdom. He's all big on that now. And all this while, Beji's just sort of like standing by him, just kind of watching. He's just like,
menacing. I forgot to mention that Sanji's a furry.
Yeah. So he's going around. He's taking, he finished cooking the food. And the moment he finishes cooking the food, he's like, all right, good. And he runs off and he goes around and starts gar-chewing everybody. Well, I shouldn't say everybody.
All the women.
All the women. And then some guys are like, we want to go to you too. And he's like, get away from me or something.
And one person even comments like, why do lesser minks only like to interact with women?
Yeah. And then he does break into like where Nami is. He tries to do it to her and she just like punches him.
Yeah. He goes blasting off again.
And they also kind of explain like what's the deal with the Wanda and Nami's clothes. And Wanda explains that like, this is a tradition among the minks that when you trust somebody deeply and you care deeply about them, you thank them by having a clothes exchange. So that's why they swap their clothes. And Nami was really happy about this because apparently the clothes she got were really valuable.
Yeah.
And that's when Peckham's and Beji arrive at the village. We come back from the commercial break and Peckham is crying. He says that, he doesn't say this yet, but the Caesar is up there on the balcony with the Straw Hats over where Peckham's and Beji is. And Caesar's like really scared. He's like, I'm really afraid that the Big Mom pilers are going to come and, you know, they're here to take me to Big Mom.
We don't know why exactly Big Mom wants Caesar, right? I think Sanji even asks him, like, what do they want with you anyways? And he doesn't explain.
Well, he did
like,
explain.
That's not something we know. Did he? I thought he kind
of... He said that that he ripped her off.
Oh, that is right. Yeah, he's like... I was given up like a loan and never paid. I just pocketed the money. That's right. I
remember saying that now. And so she's pissed off at him. Yeah. Sanji and Brooke say, okay, well, everybody stay here and say, hey, Brooke, come with me. And he and Brooke go somewhere else with Peckham's and Beji and like, let's talk in private. And this is when Peckham is like, kind of gets down on his knees and he's like, listen, Straw Hats, you saved my kingdom. You saved my brethren. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go back and tell Big Mom or tell Mama. He always calls him Mama. I'm going to tell Mama that you got away. We couldn't capture you. You know, we'll take Caesar, but we won't take you because I can't possibly take you. You saved my kingdom. And then Beji kind of gives him a look and he's like, nah. And then he kind of raises his hand and then Peckham's is shot.
Yeah. Multiple times. And Peckham's even like right before he starts shooting, I think Peckham's even mentions like quiet new guy, like calls him new guy.
Cause yeah.
He is a new guy to the Mom Pirates from our perspective. It's like, we didn't expect him to be there until a few episodes ago. Right.
Right.
And like, I'm still not exactly sure what Beji is trying to do. Like, why is he so loyal to Big Mom? We don't quite know, but he, at this moment is like, I can't have this guy, you know, abandoned the mission here, so right. Yeah, just shoot some straight in the back.
Exactly.
So, multiple times. And that's right when the episode ends. Like we have no clue. Well, we have guesses about what the outcome is here. But yeah.
Right.
If this wasn't One Piece, Beji would be or not Beji, Peckham's would be dead because he's got shot in the back like 7 times.
Yeah, you're smart to say that he's not dead. I would agree with that.
Hey, I know we brought this up before, but once a character survives exploding a nuke 3 feet in front of their face, I think they can survive anything.
Yeah. Yeah, but bullets aren't really that effective in One Piece in general.
Nope.
Yeah, that's the episode. We still quite haven't learned what the deal is with Sanji, but we're getting really close to learning that.
Yeah, it seems like Sanji probably, for some reason, either chases after or goes with the Big Mom Pirates for, you know, to make a deal, to learn something. I don't know. I'll figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and Caesar and Mononosuke must go with them, I guess, somehow, some way. Because they haven't been around either.
They did show Mononosuke briefly in this episode. Like he was like in his room sleeping.
Well, he's like sleeping and also hiding because.
Right.
He is. Than a samurai,
right?
And they don't.
He's from Wano, and I think this is also like briefly in this episode where it's like Brooke was like, "Hey, maybe we should, you know, don't mention samurai around the minks." That was like the first time I think he came up with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, and that's this episode of One Piece.
It was fine. I mean, it was basically another One Piece episode flashback, kind of slow moving as it has been.
Yeah, I kind of like. I mean, this is. kind of good because we're kind of moving a little bit away from the Mink stuff and a little more towards like what's going on with Sanji.
Like,
and
yeah, I feel like it's been like 5 or 6 weeks now. Like what happened to Sanji? And like, okay, we're finally getting there.
Yeah. It pays off. All right. Well, since this episode's all mixed up and everything, so the next show we're going to talk about is Mashal. Mashal Season 2, Episode 12, Mash Burndead and His Good Friends. This is the season finale of Season 2. Quick rundown here. Episode kind of starts out kind of funny because it's like this narration is going on. Not the person narration, but there's narration going on and it's like, oh, this is all the stuff that happened and this is really serious and blah, blah, blah. And then this just suddenly cuts to the beach. It's like, it's a beach episode.
Time for some relaxation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mash needs to wind down.
Yeah, and Dot brings a melon with, like, tentacles.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot that. Creepy thing.
That's a common Japanese tradition to do the watermelon smashing. It's just in Mashal, the watermelon is, like, living octopus creature thing or whatever.
And then Mash does a Mash thing where he doesn't like devour it, but he like smashes it with his face. He's like,
and it latches onto his head and then he smashes the head into the ground to break it.
Something like that.
And, you know, they're just goofing off. Everybody's here, including Wahlberg. Wahlberg is sitting nearby and he's also here to explain things.
Yeah, this whole sequence is pretty silly. Like Wahlberg's there and they're like, why are you here? Are you sure you're injured? He's like, no, I'm fine. Bleh. And he's like spitting up blood.
Yeah.
And he's missing an arm.
And his face burned off.
Right. Taking it pretty nice for missing an arm.
Yes.
Taking it pretty well.
The biggest thing he mentions, though, that's worth mentioning for future reference is that he does tease Mash's 5 brothers. So we now know the other 5 of the 6 hearts that Innocent Zero needs, they're all brothers of Mash's. And we actually see their silhouettes.
Yeah, so there's kind of like 2 things this reveals. One, we kind of joked earlier, I think they were just called like siblings. And you're like, does he have any sisters? And we kind of joked, can't have any sisters. This is Mash. No sisters. They're all brothers. And also, I don't think it was clear before that like the brothers were aligned into they were working together intentionally. Like they could, I was thinking maybe there's another brother out there somewhere doing something. Who knows? Like maybe in a similar position to Mashal or to Mash, where they don't know that they're
like they have to be collected by Innocent Zero rather than already being part of the group.
But yeah, so it kind of tees them up as like, you know, this is the 5 people you need to get through to get to Innocent Zero. So that sounds like that's what season 3 is about, I assume.
Yeah, I get the impression they're setting them up as into the future. Everybody's worried about Mash. He's like, oh, things are going to go really, really bad for you, Mash. You've got to be real careful. And he's like, well, I've got a 50-50 thing. But then he says something and he's like, but because I'm Mash or something, I think I have a 100% chance or some stupid. Like he can't do the math right.
It's something about muscles or something, yada, yada.
Yeah. And he's just like, it actually is 100%. And everybody's like, that's not right. That's not how math works. Speaking of which, he is then reminded, well, you know, if you really want to help your friends, because now your friends are complicit in helping you, you know, you need to win not only to protect yourself, but you need to protect the lives of your friends. And in order to do that, he can't just, you know, he has to pass the tests. There's tests. There's written tests.
Right. He has to become a divine visionary to do that. You have to at least have a passing grade.
And he's worried. Now he's suddenly really worried. He's like, oh, crap. And
this is his weakness.
Yeah. His friends basically are like, no, we're going to help you cram for finals. And so we get a bunch of fun scenes of them trying to get Mash, get him his book smarts. They end up spending a lot of time trying to train him. He's struggling. And at one point, he just runs away and buries himself in the earth because he can't do it.
The way he phrases this is amusing. Like, I would have returned to the earth. Like, okay, Badge.
Yeah.
Stop wheeling around.
But Finn finds him in the forest and he convinces him to try it again. It's like, you can do it, Matt, or something. He's like, I believe in you. Give it another try. When we come back, it's exam day. He's doing it. He's struggling. But the teacher is like, Mash burn dead. I wouldn't have thought it was even possible for you. You're so terrible at what you're doing, but you ended up scraping by, and he ends up getting like just barely passing grades.
I think it was a nice touch that she like kind of started the confrontation being kind of terse and kind of I don't want to say aggressive, but you know, she softened up, being like, I didn't expect this from you, but I'm glad to say that you actually succeeded. You passed. And she was happy to see that. She was happy to see actually Mash improve. So that was kind of nice, because we've met her before. She was kind of a sourpuss, but also Mash was not really a model student, to say the least. But she was proud of him, basically, and I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah, she's a good teacher. Unfortunately.
Yeah, he got like scores of like 40 and 50, so like...
Yeah.
I don't know how the grading system works, but like barely, they imply barely made it.
Yeah. Better than he was doing before, because when he took like the mock tests.
Less than 10.
But turns out things aren't going great for Mash, because I hear a bunch of noise outside and they look out the windows and an angry mob is coming for Mash, because they've all determined and looked, they found out that he's a lack magic. And they're storming the school. We don't want this Mash burned dead at the school. He should be. You know, he's lack magic and this is wrong and blah, blah, blah.
I think there's also like some indignation that the idea of a lack magic become a divine visionary just sets some people off.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we saw like this Mashal hasn't had a whole lot of like world building, not really. But no. They did establish like in some of the very first couple of episodes that like lack magics are like put to death.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, they're shunned upon or, you know, thought poorly of. It's like they killed them.
I know Adam Jobs was trying to make a better world, try to make lack magic more accepted. He clearly failed so spectacularly that they're not just shunned or like lower caste, but it's considered their existence is punishable by death. Like Jobs jobbed, basically.
He did. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, everyone is mad.
Yeah, and this is where the title of the episode kind of comes in, because this is when Mash's good friends step up for him. First up is Lemon, and this is what we talked about on our award show. This is like the one time.
Yeah, Lemon does a thing.
Yes.
But then she does end it by saying, she is serious, but then she ends it by saying, like, and also, he's my husband. Like, what? She's married already?
Yeah.
Like, yes, Lemon had, of course, had to end with that.
Everyone's like, oh, wow, he's already married. Like, what the hell?
and then it's Dot's turn, and you think he's going to say something profound, but then he just flips everybody off. He's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, he poses as Mash's either lawyer or agent and says he's going to read a prepared statement, but prepared statement's just basically, fuck you.
Yeah.
This section is almost like, what's the word? I might mispronounce this, like anachronistic, where it's like, yeah, it doesn't fit in time. Like, I have an agent, and someone even says, like, what's that? Like, what's an agent? Like, I have a prepared statement, like, we do that here. And he's like wearing like a suit also, like,
yeah,
clothing does fit. And then he flips him off.
Well, I could certainly imagine they'd have lawyers, so he could have gone with that angle, but I suppose he'd have been less funny. I don't know.
It felt to me intentional that like this didn't feel like a fantasy setting thing. It's like, let's just for a joke switch to like, you know, a more like normal contemporary like agent with that like type of like just suit type clothing for a joke, because it was a joke.
Enrages the mob even more, and they start throwing stones up towards the balcony where everybody's standing. But then of course Mash isn't going to let that happen to his friends. He runs up and ends up breaking all the stones before they can even reach him. You know, he just punches them out of the air. And then Wahlberg shows up and everybody's like, shock. Oh, it's Headmaster Wahlberg. Whoa. And then he says, all right. I know you guys are concerned, but here's the thing. Mash will be judged, But we've decided to hold off on that judgment until the Divine Visionary exams are over. So that, like, I don't think the crowd's cool with it, but they're like, all right, we've got to abide by the rules.
I think we should mention there's that one sleazeball in the crowd who was a big instigator who was trying to, like,
oh, yeah, that guy.
And he tried to use some magic to seal up Mash, but Mash just, like, broke out and threw the cell or whatever right on top of him. So it was kind of a doofus, but he got his just desserts.
It was a fairly lengthy section, though. Cause, like, besides the stones, yeah, that one guy, like, threw, like a one-person jail cell. And took a few minutes, you know, kind of mutters to himself, like, but no one can break out of this thing.
Yeah, he had the small face that Mashal characters do when they're all surprised.
Yeah, his face got smaller and smaller.
The joke was that he just kept repeating that over and over. It's 7 layers thick, you can't break out. It's 7 layers thick, you can't break out.
Basically turning to corn cob in real time.
Yeah. And then the episode ends with Mash praising his friends. He's like, you guys are great. And that's it. That's the end of season two, and the Divine Visionary is yet to be determined. All right. Anything else you want to mention about this episode before we go to the ranking? I think I covered everything.
There was a montage of side characters at the very end. I think the Macron was there or something, but I think Raises was as well. It wasn't important, but just something that came to mind.
Yeah, it was just kind of like maybe when Wahlberg was talking. I don't remember exactly, but basically saying Mash has gained the respect of several friends, not just like the core cast, but also like Macaron. And it showed like Macaron standing there, and then it showed like Rain. I think Rain was like petting some wildlife or something,
or feeding in a forest. Bunnies or something. I don't remember.
I forget what he was doing, but he was just showed them in like a montage, just kind of showing like the type of people, powerful people, who are on Rain or on Mash's side.
Then I think Not Gaara is still like, I don't accept Mashal because I have a stick up my ass and whatever. But I'm sure
I think that was actually at the very beginning of the episode before they went to the beach, I think, where Order is just like, I still don't trust Mash. And I think Caldo, the other guy, he's like more neutral. No, not blonde haired guy. The guy who never opens his eyes.
Not Gin, right.
Yeah, he's more of like a neutral type. He's like, well, I don't really trust Mash either, but I'm just going to see where this goes. Mm-hmm. So he's not really a friend, but he's not really an enemy. He's just kind of like, let's just see.
One more thing. This reminded me of something I wanted to ask. In the opening, we see that guy. I forget who it is, if it's Lance or who, but you see him and he's being nibbled on by a bunch of rabbits. When did that happen?
Well, isn't that Raze? I think.
Is that Rain? Maybe was that Rain?
Rains, I think it was.
What's the deal?
There was some point with their rabbits. I'm trying to remember when. Like, wasn't when he was in the forest to fight Macron? Wasn't there some rabbits involved before that?
That's the thing. I just have no memory of that. I just saw it in the opening. I'm like, that happened, I guess, but I don't remember that. I guess it sounds like you guys don't remember either. Okay.
I'll just think about it. We'll move on.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, let's rank, or I should say re-rank, Mashal. I'm talking the talk and walking it too. And yeah, I've been a boss, don't copy my moves. I see you faking, you jealous, you peeping my style. That's why I'm cutting the vibes, it's breaking me down. I'm making moves, you might see me on the big screen. With big stones around my neck, yellow citrine. I'm still on my way, but all the haters that's listening. And corners, I'm bending. Now we need to look at it and see if we think it moves any due to the events of the second season.
Really quick, I just looked up on the wiki. I don't have like an image, but I'm on Rain's wiki page for Mashal, and it says, despite his cold and stoic expression, Rain has a deep love for rabbits to the point of obsession as he owns multiple rabbits and has a lot of rabbit-themed merchandise. So it's gotta be related to him. So
okay.
It was definitely him. You could it looked like him, but I just couldn't remember.
Yeah, I don't quite remember it.
Maybe that's not something that happened. It's just illustrative of his character that he loves rabbits. Okay.
It was something from season one, maybe? And we're just blanking? I don't know. Whatever. But yeah, he likes rabbits.
So Mashal is our current number 69 show.
Nice.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. You guys can think differently of it. I don't feel like anything's changed as far as the show to me. It is the same show I experienced in the first season. Maybe it's gotten better. Maybe it's gotten worse. I can't tell.
I think my inclination is either it stayed the same or it's gotten slightly better. But like the highest I'd move it would be maybe 64, but I don't think need to move it either. But like I think there could be argument for maybe bumping it slightly or leaving it as is. And but slightly is like 3 or 4 spots at most.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think season 2 didn't get worse.
No, that's what I was gonna say.
So like, if anything, it got better. Or maybe like just maybe found more of a groove. But it's definitely not like a Blue Exorcist situation where it's like, okay, this is clearly a big improvement. So, and I think we're all on the same page where like, I think we're all on the same page where we're not saying like this is like genuinely like compelling, as in like, wow, this is really engaging and super well written with deep characters. Like, no, it's more fun, goofy, obviously very, very goofy. It's probably better when it's not taking itself too seriously. So,
well, okay, well, let's look at it from this perspective then. Let's look at the show, the next 3 shows above where it is now. Do we feel like any changes in the second season merit it going above any of those shows?
So the shows that are above it are IGPX, Outlaw Star, Kesher and Sins, which are all shows that are like, yeah, those are shows that I kind of feel like belong in this sort of, you know, not quite the bottom, but like,
yeah,
you know, one step up from the bottom of the list. Yeah. Like IGPX, most of the time, I think most of us, a common sentiment is that like, is it great? No. The second season is like, it finally kind of like, I think finds itself just as like that second season is ending in IGPX, but probably took too long to get there.
Of course, yeah. For Star Wars, we only include what's aired on Toonami, not any
We never even got like the. Yeah, people swear it gets good. Like, I don't know if I trust them or believe them based on what I've seen, but.
I've heard from other people that I know that it gets really good. So I tend to believe them. I just haven't watched it.
Yeah, we only saw like the first couple of seasons before like Disney yanked it.
Yeah.
It was like 2.5 seasons that we saw. Anyways.
Yeah,
I'm honestly just fine keeping Mashal where it is. Like,
yeah.
Putting it above IGPX, does that even matter?
Yeah.
Like, it's fine.
The only reason we would move it, I think, is to just give it some like, hey, you did all right. But I don't even know if I feel that strongly about it. Like, again, you guys are kind of feeling a little bit, it sounds like it might have gotten slightly better. I can't even feel that. I just feel like it's Mashal. It just feels the same to me. So I don't feel strongly at all to move it. But if you two want to move it up, then that's fine.
Nah, I'd say move it. How about this? One spot up above IGPX because it's funnier
than okay.
IGPX.
Let's do that.
Does that matter? No. But let's just do it.
Every spot here is the result of careful debate and calculation. It matters.
Yeah. We will be judged one day for this. Okay. All right.
How dare we?
Has moved up one spot from 69 to 60, now above IGPX and below Outlaw Star. It was 1 above Black Clover, and now it's 2 above Black Clover. No, wait. Yes. Yeah.
It was nice. Now it's slightly better than nice. Very so slightly better than nice.
I think this show, again, you said it a moment ago, and I want to just finish with this, is that I mildly enjoy this show. Like when it comes on, I watch it and I'm like, okay, I'm in for a little chuckle. But I can't like wait to see the next episode of Mashal either. I'm just sort of like, if it's on, I'll watch it, you know, and it is because that's what we do. But I'm just kind of like, yeah, it's Mashal. It's fine. I mean, that's the thing I want to really state is like, we hate watch shows sometimes. This is not that at all. I think this is fun enough that I enjoy it, but not enough that I would go out of my way to recommend it to people. That's my take on it.
Yeah. You kind of have to calibrate your expectations. Like we know what this show is in trying to do. So,
yeah, again, I think, and let me put it another way, when Mashal was running in Shonen Jump, because when I heard about it, I thought this is dumb. And when I heard it was coming to Toonami originally, I was kind of bummed. I'm like, oh, Mashal, really? That's how I felt. And then I've seen it. I'm kind of like, eh, that bad. I can kind of see why it got into Shonen Jump, I guess.
Yeah, basically, I think it's an enjoyable show that doesn't really, knock the socks off in terms of writing or narrative or anything of that sort. There's some obviously very clear flaws with it, but it has one joke, but it uses that joke pretty well most of the time. It just makes for a fun watch, but not something I'd recommend to someone. Or else, like, if it had not been already on Toonami, wouldn't necessarily say, "Oh, this would be the perfect Toonami show." But it's here. It's fine. It's fun. It's certainly better than a lot of other shows I've been in Toonami. I appreciate it, but I
Yeah.
know it's just like junk food or whatever, or like chips or, what something like that.
I think the thing that did more for me than anything is that it's a generally fun show that pokes fun at itself. If it was a serious show, I think I would not like it. But because it's a comedy and it's trying to be funny, it works.
Yeah, it's sometimes serious, but still like 80% funny and or trying to be funny. And I think, yeah, if it was like 50-50 or like 20-80 in the other direction, that would show the other parts of the show would have really pick up the slack in terms of like characters, narrative, yada yada. But since it's mostly a comedy show, those faults are present, but they don't matter as much because it's like, did you have fun? Did you laugh? Then the job was done.
All right, so that's it for Mashle for a while. There is a third season that's been announced, and apparently it's going to premiere sometime in 2027 in Japan. So if we do ever get a third season of Mashle, it's still going to be a ways out. All right. Well, we've got one more show to cover, and that is Bleach. Thousand Year Blood War, Don't Chase a Shadow. So this episode starts out with Lilibara shooting Shunsui.
He's dead.
But this ends up being kind of the opening to a big, long Bleach battle. I'll explain my power, you explain your power kind of situation. We think Shunsui is shot, but then he suddenly appears right behind Lily.
Oh, what's right behind him? As common Bleach fashion.
Yep. And he's like, "Oh, no, you just shot my after image."
Well, technically, he explains it as a concentration of that fool Lilibara because he was using his Reishi sensing abilities as opposed to his eyesight. So it was technically not an after image. It was just a more convoluted thing that's supposed to sound cooler.
Yeah. And I'm sure you guys know this, but this was news to me when I watched this episode that Shunsui's power involves him taking children's games. And then, like, using them to evoke power or magic.
If we knew this, I forgot.
We saw Shikai back during the invasion of Fairy Town arc, and there was more about using shadows, children's games. And here it's still basically using shadows, but I think the children's games feels like an addendum to that, because it was mostly about attacking from and using shadows, is how it worked. And he, again, did a little bit of that here, but the children's game thing feels like an addition more so than, oh, this is what it always was kind of thing.
Yeah. One of my notes here says, Shinji explains to the rest to keep going. Not really sure what that is.
There's a scene with the rest of like the Soul Reapers who are still running towards like the castle. Nanao, who is Shunsui's like lieutenant, basically tells them what's going on. And Shinji's like, we have to keep going. And Nanao, of course, decides to go back.
I think there's some people who want to go back to help Shinsui, but Shinji was like, no, we got to keep going. And then he was explaining, what would Yamamoto do? Or this is what it means to be the boss. You stay and fight and protect your comrades, so on and so forth. And then I think he even asked him now, what would Shinsui want us to do? And she was like, yeah, you go, keep going, guys. I'll go back, but everyone else go ahead. And so.
Gotcha.
The relationship that Shinsui and Nanao have is a little bit kind of, I don't know how you describe it. Like, she was like, don't you dare die, or I'm going to shave off your chest hair. Like, yeah. Okay. What do you mean by that?
He's
like flirty, but like not actually a relationship. I don't
it's
know.
It's more like
there's the whole thing with his sword later.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the impression I got out of about Shunsui that I didn't know, again, I'm kind of a new, but like he's apparently like a man's man, or he's like a like a ladies man kind of character.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah.
That's been his thing for forever. So that's not a new aspect of him.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at is I think that like her threatening to shave off his chest hair really would hurt his image. So he's like, oh no, this is a real threat because he's a man's man, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, he's the type of character, he doesn't do it often, but he does like, he has like flirted a bit, but like, I don't know. It's like if Nanao is the one person that he actually cares about, I don't know.
I will say they will explain their relationship in great detail in coming episodes. So we've known these characters for a while. We've got a little insight into their relationship, but we'll get some more very soon. So that'll answer most of your questions, I feel.
Yeah, we mentioned this also with Mayuri's lieutenant, whose name I forget.
Nemu.
They show up. Nemu. She shows up in both the opening and ending, but Nanao does also. So like kind of hinting that both of those characters are going to do something.
Right. No spoilers, but yeah, there's big things coming for them, but no spoilers, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is with these one syllable attendants that have the letter N in their name?
Yeah.
It's like a pattern here.
I guess two syllable.
Okay. So the fight's still going on. And then Lily kind of like, all right, I'm going to get serious now. You know how you notice how I've always kept my left eye closed? Well, now I'm going to open it. And he opens his eyes and it causes him to transform into his super next form. Let's talk about this.
Oh, it's just fucking
first of all, it doesn't matter, but there's like this weird thing where he's like, oh no, because I opened my eyes three times this happens. And
oh, that's right.
That keeping open lets him transform or something. It was like holding back or whatever. I don't know, fuck it, like it makes any sense. But he activated his trap card, whatever, I don't know. So he's transformed to...
Yeah, unfortunately his trap card involves him being a dumb-looking centaur.
Pegasus centaur or something, I don't
know. Why does it look so dumb?
It's bullshit. I think Chug made a good point where Bleach is actually one of the few series in Shonen Jump or like prominent Shonen manga that has like prominent black characters, like unambiguously black, as opposed to just like, oh, they're dark skin. Like Bleach is one of the few series of prominence that have like, okay, this character is like unambiguously black, no question. I think Chug made the good point where the ones of those who of them who are villains, a lot of them have like really weird transformations, and I don't know what to make about that. I mean, not exclusive, like obviously plenty of the other characters who are coded white or Asian or whatever have goofy transformations too. It's Bleach, but there's definitely a theme of like Tosin, Lily, and some other characters have amazing character designs, and then that would transform to like blah, 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 and just like, what are we fucking looking at here?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I thought this character was kind of cool until this moment. I mean, I guess he's technically still cool. He just looks dumb. I just think, I'm like, why do you look like this? It's so, it wasn't threatening. It just kind of made me laugh when I saw it.
And it gets dumber. I'll just say that. Like, yeah. I don't think it's spoilers to say the fight's not over this episode. It gets dumber.
Well, we come back from the commercial break, and this is when Shunsui activates his Bankai. And this is where it's like, telling of the story invokes like rules that, you know, that he can use. I can't, how do I explain
it's
this?
Like
you know what
I mean. Reciting a tragedy and going through the act of a tragic play, and basically things get worse and worse for Lily, and you know, he can't escape it and just kind of, he's kind of, what the fuck's going on? And of course, this would be, as Greg would say, another domain expansion type Bankai. And so he's just kind of, walking through a tragic play, and as it proceeds, Lily gets more and more injured and sicker. And
right. Like, I think there's one, when he gets to like the finale or near the finale, he's like, then the protagonist was underwater. And now it feels like there's water everywhere and Lily is drowning in it. And then this is when I figured it out during the course of the episode, but when she first appeared, I'm like, what is this? But then this is when Ohana appears, which is, I guess, like the physical manifestation of his sword.
Yes. As in factoid, this was a filler character made for a filler arc back in the original Bleach anime, but Kubo liked her so much, he made her canon. But now she's like an official part of the canon lore, even though she was initially made for filler nonsense. Kubo just liked her that much.
Why are you bringing me out and blah, blah, blah. And they're like having a little conversation. And he's like hot to see her, then this is where I really started to get a good impression of what this character, who Shunsui is, because he's like hitting on her.
Yeah, because like his sword is like a kind of sexy femme fatale woman, and like all the Sherlock said, like, they both have eye patches, they're both missing eyes, like kind of like playing to that. Yeah, it's supposed to Mayuru's sword is a freaky baby or whatever the fuck. So pretty good contrast of their personalities.
And so he finishes the story with the final act, where he's able to slice the neck of Lilybaro. He slices his neck, and then his head looks like it like explodes. I'm not sure if it did.
It doesn't look like it explodes. It did explode. Yeah.
Okay. It kind of like grows big and then pops off, and it's like boom. And then he kind of lays down with Ohana. And there's like a brief moment here where Ohana like tries to stab his eye. I guess she's kind of like evil or something. And he's like, whoa, 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 don't take out my other eye. I need that. You know, and they're kind of like flirting. And then he's about to tell her something. And it just, there's a hard cut right to the credits. Like it cuts like mid-sentence what he's saying. I mean, it's deliberate, I can tell, but it's just interesting how they ended the episode with just like a hard cut. So yeah, this was, we're getting to see Shunsui's, he is the captain of the court guards, right? So, This is kind of him strutting his stuff as the new leader. And there was this episode about him being like, you know, if I have to sacrifice myself, that's the job that I've taken. You know, that's what I got to do.
Final cuts felt a little abrupt to me, but I guess it doesn't really matter too much.
I think it felt to me like it was like a style.
Because I don't remember it being that abrupt when I watched before, but I could have a bad memory on that part.
He was about to say something to her, and he got like half the sentence out, and then it just went credits. I'm like, oh, they kind of deliberately cut off what he was going to say. Okay, and so that'll be it for Bleach. We get to see some domain expansionings and some crazy transformations. It's pretty cool, though. All right, let's talk about flavor alerts.
Play, flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Anything super standout this week?
I wouldn't say that the best fight. Anything in terms of voice performance? Anything in terms of character name or design? Best design. Lilybaro, Bankai.
I wish we had a worse design. Yeah, I mean, Shunsui's... what about Shunsui's Bankai? What do you think?
I don't know.
He did use it. I'll be honest. I thought it was kind of neat, but I also was just sort of confused the whole time. I think it may have been due to the fact that they were talking about what seemed like Japanese children's stories or Japanese proverbs that I don't really know. So I was kind of like,
what? It was just more the visual spectacle that was made it kind of cool and the whole thematic and whatnot. Trying to understand an explanation, I felt was less important to be like, oh, cool shit's happening. And like, there we go.
He's got a lot of charisma, I will say that. I don't know. I mean, I could take it or leave
it. Does Lemon's moment, like, standing up count for anything? And does a thing, and it's kind of heroic, I guess, or honorable? Or is that just kind of a shrug, whatever?
Not really.
I shrug. If only because she just went right back to doing what she always did anyway.
All right, fair enough.
No, I appreciate you bringing that up, and I think us talking about it and recognizing it is more than is enough. I don't think it's award worthy. It's unfortunate that we even have to mention that.
Best character design: cave gremlins and primal.
That's pretty gross.
Blue Orchestra just give us any moments, I guess.
That's maybe what I'm thinking.
And a wrench confrontation. Or the Rin punches his demon self. Mephisto kind of talks with Rin afterwards.
I don't know. I guess not. I mean, I don't feel strongly about it.
All right. We don't have to force ourselves. I'm just thinking things through, so.
No, and I'm with you. And I'm just telling you, and I'm giving you my reason why I don't think it's, like, going to be nominatable. As I say, I felt like that was a nice moment, but it wasn't, like, a memorable moment. I mean, it won't stick with me, I think. But I appreciate every suggestion we can get. I mean, honestly. I don't think Rin's new form or his new appearance has changed enough to really modify. No. Yeah. No.
I think I'd feel strongest about for that for maybe the Shinsui's Bankai is probably the thing I feel strongest about. But if other people are just wasn't cool enough, that's also fine. So,
what do you think, Seda? Do you want to nominate the Shinsui's Bankai, or do you think
not really?
Okay,
I think it's almost too many rules.
Gotcha.
It failed the rule of cool to me.
And yeah, I can't think of much else in Blue Exorcist that was like amazing, because it was all just really like dealing with, it was one long scene for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a lot of teasing and setup for next season, but you know, we won't see any of that payoff for a while.
We nominated Mephisto's voice actor.
It was a late nomination, but yes. I think this episode, I was paying attention to it more. This episode, Sam's a good kind of imp lord. Like, I want to punch this guy voice.
Yep. Yeah, he was really showing his stuff off this time. And I think the guy, I mean, we nominated him for the awards we just did, but I think the voice of Yukio is also doing great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which voice actor?
Johnny Young Bosch.
Oh, for Yukio. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Gets a chance to do some crazy stuff.
I mean, no, he's Nero. I was going to say he's not Virgil, he's Nero, but he definitely, Yukio is taking a very Virgil-esque path. So Johnny Young Bosch, I guess, definitely has some experience with that, or at least, you know, playing against that. So, like, you know, it's something definitely in his wheelhouse.
What about the voice actor for Peckham's? Didn't he give, like, an amazing performance?
No.
He was crying.
I didn't. Oh, it was sarcasm. Okay.
Like, I don't think it was actively bad. It was very cartoony.
It was cartoony, but deliberately. Yeah, he's just over the top and goofy.
I think we're fine. Just no nomination.
I think we're fine. We don't have anything. All right. We tried. Not every week's going to be a winner when it comes to nominations. So,
I mean, some weeks can just be good, but not hit the great or the super awful to really get nominated for something.
All right. So with that, we will then wrap up the episode. This was episode 460. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
No problem.
And thank you, Crocodile.
Thank you. I appreciate, again, the combinations that were made, and I'm glad to have been with you guys this week.
No problem. We will be back next week for episode 461 and to discuss the premieres of both Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers. So, later.